has found the very best in original talk radio broadcasting on the internet. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want. What we want. You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to On the Couch, On the Couch with Dr. Michelle on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. It's your friendly psychologist, Dr. Michelle. Welcome to the couch with me. Take your shoes off, put your feet up, enjoy, relax, because for the next 50 minutes or so, we're going to have a great show together. We're talking about a lot of the usual things, and of course, we always take listeners' calls. Let me give you that number right off the bat here in case you have a burning question you would like to ask. That number here in Los Angeles and all over the world, if you please. It's area code 323-203-0815. That's area code 323-203-0815. Feel free to call in if you have questions or if you have relationship problems, if you just want to contribute to the show, maybe share some experiences you've had, good or bad, with your relationships or whatever. And I have a really special guest today. You're not only a guest, you're a good friend.
Yeah.
I've known Ellen Roth. She's a psychotherapist and has been doing it and has so much experience since, wow, it's been like 1995. I look back and we were both working at a clinic in Los Angeles. It was called A Touch of Care, which was a really cool clinic, don't you think?
Yeah.
I like that a lot. But Ellen has been doing psychotherapy work in hospital environments, in your private practice office now, of course,
yes,
and for a very long time, in clinics,
yes,
and doing group and individual therapy.
Yes.
So, so we're, you know, you specialize in just about everything. I mean, sometimes we have to be a jack of all trades and know all about different phases of, you know, psychotherapy and everything, but your specialty, really, I mean, the way I came to know you is through relationships, knowing,
right,
you know, how to work with couples and relationships.
Yes.
And what are some of your other specialties that you focus on?
Well, I specialized in couples, like you said.
Yep.
Individuals with mood disorder.
Ah, yeah.
And people who have eating disorder, chemical
right,
dependencies.
Right.
And just recently, I've finished 100 hours of intensive training in clinical hypnosis.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I want to talk about that, too, because I know, you know, a lot of people, I mean, hypnosis has been around forever.
Forever and ever.
And some people say, oh, it's really worked for me in managing, you know, quit smoking, lose weight, things
right,
like that. And it does work, right?
It does work.
Cool.
It actually works, and it works in people learning to develop their own resources that they consciously don't even know that they have.
Right, exactly. So it helps you. You do self-hypnosis, or do you do hypnotherapy sessions with the
hypnotherapy
individual?
Hypnotherapy sessions, and then teach them, send home a recording,
yeah,
and let them keep
yeah,
listening, and teach them how to do it themselves.
That's great.
Yeah, because
so then they can do that, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say that the tapes that are out there for everyone doesn't necessarily work for everyone.
Right.
Because you want to work with the client's own issues, the way that they come up with their symptoms.
Yep, yep.
And you take the symptoms that they have.
Right, right.
And teach them how to refocus. Because hypnosis is just a state of it's a natural state. It's the kind of thing we have when we're driving the car and
right,
suddenly we realize, oh my God, we passed the signal.
So we're in a state of hypnosis when we're kind of zoning out, in other words, right?
Right.
Wow.
If you're in a good movie
right,
and you're really excited,
yeah,
you're still in a state of hypnosis if you believe what's going on.
Wow. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Is it fair to say you're not conscious of what you're thinking in the here and now? Or is your subconscious taking over?
Well, you're conscious on some level at all times of what's going on in the external world.
Right, right.
It's a matter of disassociating, being absorbed in
yeah,
a topic,
yeah,
focusing, and It happens through selected attention and selected focus.
Wow.
And that'll happen in a session when someone's talking to you, like right now.
I could
be sitting here staring at you and just talking about something fascinating.
Right.
And I can go into trance.
Really?
Yeah, so it can happen while you're talking to a client
and
really having them be absorbed.
Yeah.
It's really interesting when you're working with couples.
Yeah.
And you get them to do a dialogue where one has to listen carefully to the other.
Right.
Where they can't interrupt with their own thought or their own feeling. They have to take in the other person. So they're pretty much hypnotized by the thought of what's going on.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of like maybe like working with couples where you're saying, well, what would be the appropriate I statement to say to your man about how you feel about what he did? And then he's listening, and then you'd say, how would you respond to that? How would you respond to that? So that there's like, because the focus is so intense.
Right.
And that could be like a form of hypnotic trance almost.
Right. And you're really listening carefully, yet you do know what's going on around you.
Right.
That's the thing. People think when they're hypnotized, they're being controlled.
Right. Well, that's the thing. I mean, is that true?
No.
So there's all these fears because I've had people who have like pain disorder, major pain disorder, and or sleep disorder.
Right.
And
fabulous.
It really? And I think, well, you know what? These folks really need a hypnotherapist. So if I send them to you, and they may have all these fears, though. A lot of people go, well, gosh, she's going to take control over my brain. And she's going to, No.
And, Basically, what you want them to do is learn to have their own center of control, their own locus of control, and know when they have control and when they don't have control over certain situations.
Right.
And see how they
move
through that arena.
Okay. So,
yeah, I mean, we always tell people that if you focus on something, you'll amplify it.
Right.
So with pain, you don't say to somebody, now tell me about your pain, how, you know what?
Exactly.
You get them to, a good interview, you ask the right questions, and if you ask the right questions, you'll be able to give a good enough intervention.
Right, exactly. Well, that's true with anything, isn't it, huh?
Yeah.
But so, let's say I refer somebody to you, or I'm coming into you, and I'm having a lot of pain in my lower back, let's say. So I'm really afraid. If I'm really afraid that you're going to take control of my mind, would I let you hypnotize me?
Probably on some level, no, and on some level, yes, because anytime two people are together.
Okay.
Hypnosis is a social experience.
Okay.
And so what I would do is explain to you that you're in control at any time.
Yeah.
If you're willing and you desire something enough, you'll do it.
Yes.
And the whole idea is if you have a goal, you don't look for the obstacles.
Right.
You look for ways to meet your goal.
Right.
And so if you're in a lot of pain
and
you don't want to be in pain anymore, we can help by having you focus in other ways, having the pain drain out or move out, helping possibly take medication and make it work stronger so that you may not have to take as much.
So when you say helping the pain drain out, are you talking about like a visualization?
Not just a visualization, because hypnosis utilizes all your senses. So you can actually have somebody experience the pain they're in and then have the pain possibly move down, let's say from your lower back, down through your legs, down through your, you know, feet and out through the floor.
Whoa. So in that hypnotized state, they'll just sort of feel and visualize, and you walk and talk. I'd rather you talk them through seeing this pain go, whoa, it's leaving my body. And you know, of course, they're in a relaxed state, so they're going to just allow you kind of talking through to help guide their minds.
They're in a relaxed state.
Yeah.
Sometimes people aren't because pain is very...
Right.
You know, pain is painful and
it's
disconcerting to people. However, when you deal with trance logic, it's as if I said to you right now, Michelle, make your back absolutely numb.
You're conscious.
It's not going to happen.
But
in a good state of induction where you have a selected attention, a selected focus, you're disassociated, you're absorbed.
Right.
You will make things happen. And
Right.
sometimes the hypnotist is talking And after a while, we do check in because sometimes people just take themselves on their own journey.
Right.
You know, and we have to find out.
Yes,
what are they
thinking?
What are they doing?
Well, that's cool. Yeah. That's really so. Yeah, and they're surprised. So what are some of the things that people come, you know, to see you for, you know, with hypnosis? Is it
pain? Creativity, sleep,
yeah.
Wanting to lose weight.
Oh, that's
wanting
great.
Wanting to stop a pattern that's negative. Smoking.
Oh, great.
Screaming at people when they think that they don't have any, you know, choice.
right.
What they do. You teach them to discern certain things. Like, what do you listen to? What don't you listen to in your own mind?
Cool.
Or what other people are saying. You teach them
it's selective attention, too. Exactly. So, all right. That's really, there's so many things you can do. So many things you can do, which is great. And also what I love is that people, if they're willing to do it, tell me about this repressed memory stuff. I mean, is that for real? I don't know I've read a lot of material on it, and I've heard arguments on both sides, of course, that we repress, of course, trauma. I mean, that's what the PTSD is all about, and then, you know, but I mean, repressed abuse, you know, which comes out as PTSD, but I mean,
I don't necessarily believe that in a state of hypnosis you're going to get an entire picture of exactly what happened. People have a tendency to remember things in fragments, take and put fragments together and compile an entire whole, and it may not be exactly what happens. In a court of law, at least in the state of California, we don't accept.
Oh, okay, interesting. That is evidence. I had this repressed memory, and I was, you know, because that was a big deal a while back.
It was.
You know, there was a, who was it? Was that Rosie O'Donnell who came out? She was like a celebrity who came out and said she went under hypnotherapy and had repressed memory of.
Oh, really?
Yeah, of sexual abuse. And, you know, she had issues with her family, and she was doing, you know, this was a big controversy that came up, and I was going, I don't know,
pretty controversial.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, you know what I'd like to do, just because if folks are interested in, you know, learning more about hypnosis, and if they want to take care of certain patterns of behavior or pain or, you know, addictions in their life, can you apply that to alcoholism as well?
You can apply it to most any pattern of behavior that's not giving you a life that's full and exactly the way you would like it to be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, if you'd like more information on that, you know, the hypnosis, and we're going to talk about relationships and stuff like that, you can sure give Ellen a call or log on to her website or her email. Why don't you give us your phone number to your office, and then what we can do is just, you know, what we can do is just...
It's 310 855-0223.
Good. 310-855-0223. And that's, you know, folks, if you're interested in working with Ellen. And we're going to talk also about other stuff, too, that we work on. And we also, like I said earlier, we met at a clinic. And you were leading groups and seeing individuals as well. Mm-hmm. And this clinic, this was more, they called it an outpatient psychiatric clinic. Folks had been, you know, in a higher level of, you know, inpatient in a hospital. And then you just kind of worked down. This clinic also had residential homes. People, this would be the next step out of the hospital. They, you know, we had nurses and psychiatrists, and they were on medication. Then they come to the outpatient treatment center and do groups. And so that was really kind of fun. But, you know, talking about, and we did couple therapy in that center as well, which was so cool. You know, I really remember that. But, you know, you, for me, have worked with relationships for a long time. And I refer a lot of people to
yes,
you too,
do.
Some
Thank
relationships.
You.
Well, listen, I, you know, sometimes you've been doing relationship therapy for so long, and I'm just like saying, you know what, I think Ellen would be the best bet for these folks, because, you know, she's just got the background in terms of their issue, their particular issue. So I was thinking about talking about some of the, so folks could call in and share their experiences too, but, you know, some of the most interesting relationship issues that we have seen, you know, with couples. Some of the most, I don't want to say weird or bizarre, but I mean, true, there's a lot of, I mean, you're shocked at some of the problems that these people present you with. We're like, what? I can't believe that you're coming to see me and you're actually telling me what's going on here, you know.
Yeah.
So what I'd like to do is talk a little bit about some of the, you know, most interesting couples are some of the most interesting people we've had to deal with. I had a couple. Let me tell you this to start off. This is really blew me away. I had a couple quite a while ago. And the usually, let me just say this. Couples don't come into therapy until it's usually way too late. Right? They've
True.
Already, they're just so done. It's like the last straw. Well, maybe we should try couple therapy. And they're just, you know, they've just been practicing such unhealthy behaviors for so long. And then they finally show up and they're a mess. Right?
Yeah.
So I know. It's sad. So anyway, you know, you say, okay, let's try to... They're so far gone in their communication habits and their behavior towards each other that you, oh my God, you have to start all the way back at the beginning, you know. But what I was going to say was I had this couple. This is so interesting. And this... They both had issues. I was seeing the woman. And now I'm not going to see the couple. I don't see usually an individual and then bring the other partner in. It's just not, for me, it's not ethical. Because I'm already a champion of the person I'm seeing. I'm helping them. I'm trying to understand them. I'm telling them why they may be getting, you know, into trouble and things like that. But when the other person comes in, I'm not going to be the mediator. No, it's got to be someone else that I turn the couple over to. But I was seeing this woman, and she told me that her husband would not go to couple therapy with her until she had a personality test taken. He said, you have a personality disorder, and I will...
Wait, the patient diagnosed his wife?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah. God. Yeah. You have a personality disorder. I don't know what it is. You got something wrong with you, but I will not go into couple therapy with you until you get a diagnosis. And the guy, this is what the guy was telling his wife.
Is he a therapist?
No, he's just a guy who from what I hear from her, has a lot of really serious problems and is contributing problems to the relationship. So I thought that was kind of bizarre that he was saying, you need to have a label. You need to be diagnosed before we both go in. So
do they have power struggles by any
chance? You think? Exactly. So the couple's therapist will know ahead of time that you have a personality disorder. So that's really crazy. I mean, I was just like, whoa.
Yeah.
So she said, do you think I should take this test? Do you think I should go ahead and see if I have a problem? And I said, no, really, I don't. And I couldn't diagnose that she had a particular or individual personality disorder. No,
yeah.
She did not. According to my information that I got, I hadn't been seeing her that long, but the diagnosis was not certainly a personality disorder. She had a lot of problems. Personality disorders, folks, you know, they're the axis two cluster Bs. They're pervasive. They're different types of disorders rather than like major depression, anxiety disorders, mood disorder. You know, folks, it's personality traits that are very skewed, awkward, socially awkward. You've heard of narcissism, folks, and borderline and things like that. So, but he wants her to be nailed and go into this therapy. And the purpose, folks, of couple therapy is having a blank slate for a therapist. You know, you want, right?
Right.
So when you have a couple come in, you want to just get a feel for what's going on. You don't want to already have people coming. Well, you probably do, right? Have people that come in and go, well, she does this and she says this. No, he says this and he says this.
I actually, the way I start off is I was trained in Imago therapy.
Uh-huh.
And Imago therapy basically is that the therapist is kind of a coach. And you teach the people how to communicate, and you learn to, in the communication process, you learn to have empathy, and you can appreciate the other person. And the way we start that is not only by teaching, but asking the person, you know, both people, to give each other a compliment.
Yes.
About who they are as people.
Yes.
So that you start off with a mindset that's positive, and then you can bring in a specific thing that bothers you about either the relationship, mm-hmm. the person, mm-hmm. a behavior mm-hmm. that frustrates you, and learn to go through that in a cognitive behavioral way. Eventually, you get through all this and learn what it reminds you of from your past. And each person is to listen carefully and to repeat back what they heard, to globalize what they believe is the other person is saying, and to also tell them they can imagine what they might be feeling. And I give them a list of prompts of feelings, positive and negative, and fears, so that they don't feel obligated to come up with this all on their own if they don't have it.
Right.
A lot of people can't tell you what they're feeling or, you know, what's going on. And we tell them, you know, look at what you're feeling. It usually comes from what you're thinking about.
Yes, yes.
What you just heard.
Yes.
You know, and there's so many distortions that can occur as a result of that.
Right.
And often, if the other person is really willing, you know, that's what we also teach. You may not want to. It's like I say, I don't want to go to the dentist. It hurts.
Right.
But I'm not willing to lose all my teeth.
Right,
I'm willing
right.
to go so I can keep my teeth and have a pretty smile and, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And a healthy mouth.
Right, right.
And I give them that metaphor.
Right. Right.
And
that's a good metaphor. I mean, it really is. Could be a lot of people just don't think that they, you know, need, why do I really need to come in and get relationship therapy? Why do I, come on, we could, why? You know, what is someone else out there going to help
better
me
better than why is how and what.
Right? Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So what do you mean how and what?
How do you do what you do? What is it that you do? And are you willing? And truly willing to change it. You know, you can keep looking at all the obstacles, but if your goal is to have a healthy, happy relationship, you'll work on it. And you'll learn to listen to each other carefully, and you'll learn to have empathy for one another. It's really hard to hate somebody
right.
and to just wipe them out
right.
verbally if you really can understand where they're coming from.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
and
it's
so you
true.
Basically are teaching them to really learn to care about each other
right, right.
in a different and new way.
Right,
and it's really very beautiful watching this happen, watching it unfold.
Exactly.
So,
what are some of the most common problems do you think men have as opposed to women when they come into like you know counseling therapy for a couple? Do you think men are more resistant, or do you think they don't open up as much when they talk? Or
possibly, I don't know that men are that much different than women. I would imagine that women have a tendency to be more social. We sit and we talk more.
Right,
and
right.
And we talk about our feelings,
right.
and we talk about what we're thinking about, and what we feel about what we're thinking, where men aren't necessarily always given that
right.
opportunity in society. And so if you teach them that they have this opportunity and if they use it, it works.
Yes.
The only thing I wanted to share was that I will not work with couples who are in the middle of having affairs.
Oh, yeah.
Or who are in the middle of abuse.
Right.
That's one thing I always say. Number one, if you're going to have an affair, we can't work together.
Right.
Because
right.
I'm not holding secrets.
Exactly. Exactly.
And yet, I have to, by law, hold secrets. You know?
Right, that's
so
really
it puts me in a real
thing.
Compromise.
Exactly.
It's what I'm asking them not to do.
Right.
Although, you know, I'm thinking about hypnosis when people are in trance. You don't ask them everything. You give them the honor and the integrity of keeping something special to themselves.
Right, right.
And that as well in couples therapy. There's certain things you may not want to share, but one biggie is you don't want an exit that's an affair.
Right.
Because I think there are certain exits in
right,
relationships.
Right,
if you
right.
want to work on it, you can overwork, you can
right.
you know, drink, you can gamble, you can
right,
do all the
right.
exits you want.
Right, right.
And not be with your partner.
Right, right.
And so,
but having an affair is like, no.
It's just too hard to work with because there's this dishonesty going
right.
on.
Right. Would you work with somebody who came in and said, my husband or my wife once had an affair and now they're not having an affair anymore? And
yes,
they're,
of course.
You know, okay. And they really are coming to say, you know, I need to forgive her or him.
Well, yeah.
And
understand and let go. And one thing that's really important is not to ask for the details. I mean, everybody
right.
says, I want to know exactly what you did. You
told right.
me everything you did with
right,
them.
Right.
Basically, they're feeling left out, and they're feeling
right.
like they were not part of.
Right.
Because this is a marriage.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And where you share, and they were not included.
Yep.
So, you know, we work on that as far as forgiving. And,
right,
and
right.
learning to bring the person back into their lives in a safe way again,
uh-huh.
where they
uh-huh.
can trust them and That's honor them and respect them. Because without that, I don't know how you could love someone.
Exactly. Yeah. I had a client years ago who had, are you ready for this, been married to this fellow a couple of years and kicked him out 10 times. Took him back, kicked him out 10 times. He did have an affair originally in the onset of the relationship. And from then on, she could never trust him, you know, because if he were to work late or go out with his friends or, you know what I'm saying, and not call, she would immediately go to, oh my gosh, they're having an affair or he's having another, you know, relationship. And it took her so long to get to the point that understanding he really did want to work on it after, you know, but he was wounded because she kicked him out. Sure. And it got to the point where she was assuming and she was paranoid.
Sure.
He didn't call. Oh my gosh, it's 1 a.m. Well, he was a bartender, you know, it's 1 a.m. He gets off work and he's wired. The guys are going to go, you know, either drink after work or some of the girls or whoever, you know, his comrades, or he's going to come home and be wired and stay up. But, you know, he gets off work late, so she's sitting up waiting for him. And, you know, anything over an hour, oh, I know he's having an affair. I know he's, and she did 10 times. And he, like a little puppy, would pack up his little bag. It's almost like he had it all ready to go each time after like the third time.
Yeah, we have a sheet, and it teaches this progression. It's called frustration behaviors, frustrating behaviors. And she might sit down and then bring it into therapy, and then she can work with him on this at home, which is really kind of neat.
Yeah.
Which is the frustrating behavior is you came home late.
Right.
What did I, and then the next box is what I immediately said to myself.
Right, right.
And she says to herself whatever she says.
Right, right. He's and having an affair.
He's
right.
having an affair.
Right, right.
And then she feels any number of feelings about what she said to herself, not about what he did,
right.
but what she said to herself.
Right.
When she has a reactive behavior, she kicks him out.
Right.
Because she's afraid to find out.
Yes.
May he have been really having an affair. So that's what she also does. And then she says, if she's working this, she tells him this whole thing, and she says, I really wish that I could say to you, I knew who you are. Could you, you know, do this, that, and the other? And then the last thing is, please, you know, don't come home late. Okay, well, if you can't, you come up with 3 positive, measurable tasks for the person to do, which is, if you know you're going to be late, please call me and let me know.
Right. Right.
You know, if you're going to be late and you walk in and you couldn't call, start by saying, honey, I know you're going to be upset. You know, something to that effect.
Right.
Where she can actually be able to take that in and understand and then bring it into therapy if they need to.
Right, right.
And have a dialogue or do the dialogue at home.
Right, exactly.
Before the screaming and the yelling and the projecting starts.
Right, exactly.
And
her, you know, she's stirring inside, creating these visualizations of him in bed. With some woman and
how does she feel about that? What does she think about
God,
that?
And she's,
herself.
Yes, exactly. And the reality is he's still wired or he's burnt out and just needs to, you know, download from all the rude people he's been dealing with from working at night.
And she may even say, if you're really burnt out, maybe what you could do while you're chilling out, washing the glasses or whatever, call me and we'll talk.
Yes.
We'll talk about something positive and we'll plan something wonderful to do. Because that's the other thing. People stop having dates. They stop. They unromanticize their relationships. So what you want to do is get them to re-romanticize their relationships.
Yes, yes. It's so true. I mean, really. And people can find that after 10, 15, 20, 30 years. I mean,
I hope so.
You know, I mean, yeah, me too. I know. It's true, though. I mean, it's you have to, or I have to, as therapists, we have to reintroduce people into what originally about this person got you fired up. Not they were hot. Well, they were hot, you know.
And air conditioner.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the thing. You know?
And there's also times when you have to look at a relationship and help people get out of it.
You know, that's
hard.
Tough, isn't it?
It's hard.
Do you feel guilty when you're doing... I feel like I have tried everything possible for this couple. I've explored every avenue. They're not... Or one of the partners is not willing to go there. They're just showing up.
Right. They're not willing to do
right.
whatever it takes. They keep looking for the obstacles because the goal to have that good, happy marriage that's satisfying is not in mind.
Yes.
They've lost sight of it.
Right, exactly.
So they see every obstacle available
exactly.
to jump on. And every exit.
And they've been threatened by one of the other partners. If you don't show up, I am gone or I'm kicking you out.
Mm-hmm.
So, and right. And it's really a tough one. So how would you put to a couple who you've seen and you just know that this it's just not, they are so self-destructive together. They're so toxic for each other. How do you kind of go about saying sometimes, I mean, I know I've done it before. I've said, since you're not willing to carry through with some of the exercises and communication.
Right, and if people don't
done,
do homework assignments
right.
in any kind of therapy, you're not going to get a good enough result, even if the homework is to go home and be mindful.
Yes.
And it's something simple and beautiful is going home and being mindful.
And people don't know, a lot of people don't know that mindful came from Buddhism, but in the psychotherapy world, mindfulness is a really, so maybe you can explain a little bit more with people. You know, it's thinking about what you can do, right?
Right.
Thinking about what you can do. It's going, well, the old traditional thing is just kind of meditating and allowing thoughts to flow through, but it's really taking control of, you know, the thought process.
Well, it's also looking at your own patterns, your own beliefs, your own projections.
Right.
Sometimes you need to do some reality testing, and sometimes you just have to become aware of your own breathing.
You know,
are you comfortable in your own skin?
Yes.
Can you just relax with yourself? Can you stop imagining the worst of your partner?
Right.
Can you imagine that you're happy right now?
Yep.
And what would it take?
Right.
And what will it take for you?
Right.
Not what your partner will do for you, but what will you do?
Right, exactly. Self-responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Take responsibility for your thoughts that are driving you crazy, the fearful thoughts.
Right.
Yeah.
And if you have a partner who is really available, they'll understand when,
right.
you know, you're having some flashback from some other time. I mean,
words
mean any number of things. The word to run has any connotation to run away, to run to run a government.
Right.
When you're talking to somebody, you know, are they flashing back on some other meaning? And if you have a dialogue with them and you talk with yourself, you actually become mindful of what your meanings are and what you believe and think. And where you got those notions from.
Yes.
You're able to share that with your partner so they know where you're at.
Right, exactly. And a lot of people say to me when they come in, I don't want to do any psychodynamic stuff. I know about my parents. I know where I came from. How abusive they were. I know I've got it all figured out. I want to go from right now.
And that's okay because you look at the patterns where you are right now. And you help that person use those patterns and find their resources
right.
that they may not even realize they have.
Right.
And when they can utilize their resources
mm-hmm.
that they don't even know that they have,
mm-hmm.
you watch their lives expand and develop in ways that they'd hoped possible.
Right.
But as far as couples, you know, telling them that it's over, you know, I've never said to somebody, hey, look,
you guys,
drop it, it's over.
Yeah, really.
And I've never tried to push somebody to keep coming when they were finished.
Right.
I do recognize when someone's not willing, and I point out, not directly necessarily,
right.
But, you know, how willing are you to make this relationship really work?
Right.
How much do you really honor this other person, respect them, love them, want to be with them? And that's when you have to go home and you have to be mindful and say, what is it that's real for me?
Right.
Am I at all comfortable? Am I part of what's uncomfortable? You know, am I making this work? Am I making this not work?
Right.
And
I think that's really difficult for a lot of people.
It is.
You know,
and that's a homework assignment
that
people don't want to do.
It's a long-term homework assignment, too.
They'd rather have sometimes us make those decisions,
right.
and I'm not willing to make that decision for someone.
Me either. And what are you willing to take from this person? What are you willing to allow from this person.
Yeah, what are you willing to tolerate?
Exactly.
And everybody's level of toleration is different. I always say I have very fair skin. I can't sit in the sun.
Right.
But I have clients who have beautiful tans, and you know, and I kind of envy them that they can tolerate sitting in the sun like that. I wish I could, but I can't.
Exactly.
And so I have to know what my limits are.
Exactly. We all do. We all have to know what our limits are. And yeah, it is difficult sometimes saying, guys, if you're not willing to go through this, if you're not willing to take the steps to work through your relationship problems, I can't help you.
No, I can't fix it.
Exactly.
I don't think any therapist can fix anything.
I agree.
I think we help people find their resources to develop their own way.
Exactly. And that's in the questioning is really important. Yeah. Help. It's so important to help people discover within themselves the best solutions to their problems and ask them creative questions within them to explore those questions.
Right. And sometimes when it becomes really difficult, you may use metaphor.
Yeah.
Telling a story.
Right.
Sharing an experience.
Right, right.
Just helping them to focus.
Yeah. Exactly.
That they can come through it.
I have a couple of emails I received from listeners. So shall I read them out loud? Maybe we can help some of these people or give some advice.
Well, we could try.
Well, I love this stuff.
Okay.
It's great. All right. Let's see. There is no name here. There's just an initial, L. So let's go with that. Dear Dr. Michelle, this is written by L. I'm 39, single, and in the middle of a very strange relationship with a 53-year-old man. He's divorced and living with his mother. We've been seeing each other occasionally. I see you shaking your head. We've been seeing each other occasionally for the past 4 months. And although he keeps saying that he finds me attractive and interesting, he avoids any form of intimacy apart from long goodbye kisses. Every time I offer him to spend the night at my place, he leaves. He's introduced me to most of his friends and takes me to their parties, but he rarely calls, and we might go weeks without seeing each other unless I call him. I feel uncomfortable having to chase or seduce him. Am I being pathetically naive and reading more in this relationship than there is to it? So my answer to that would be yes, I think you are. I mean, you know, here's all the signs. First of all, I don't know how many relationships this gentleman has been in. He's divorced, so maybe he was able to commit and have a relationship at one time. Mm-hmm. But she's 39 and he's 53. Now, that's a pretty, you know, that's a distance. But mm-hmm. I mean, people can come together on that.
Sure.
I think that couples can survive and thrive and find love and commonalities in that. But I would be willing to say that she may be, I wouldn't say pathetically naive as she writes here.
No, I mean, it sounds like he's pretty guarded.
Yes.
And I don't know what he's guarding. I mean,
right, right. And some people, you know, in this day and age, a lot of adult children with this economy lose all of what they have. I mean, I have people who have invested money in stocks that have lost everything and really are living with their elderly parents, which is really, you know, a tough place to be in life.
It's a hard time. And you know, who knows what happened in his marriage? Who knows what happened in relationships?
Right.
He may be really wounded and he's just going slowly, or he might be shy. I mean, I don't know.
It's really difficult to define exactly. But
she shouldn't call herself pathetic.
I know. And if I were to probably sit down with her, I would want to do more exploring and just, you know, talk with this guy.
Sure.
Have her sit down with him and, you know, just ask questions and, you know, not coming from a nagging point of view, because that's what he might be avoiding and why he might be fearful, because he had someone.
Or she might share what, you know, she's saying she's pathetically, you know, naive.
Right.
She may share what the feeling is that's coming up for her and the thoughts that are coming up for her when she doesn't hear from him, when she doesn't speak with him, and look at herself, what's going on for her that she wants to be with him when he's not necessarily coming after her.
Right, exactly. What is it within her that she's seeking someone who is probably unavailable? And he may be embarrassed to tell her. Maybe he's a caretaking, you know, an elderly mom, because he's 53, so she's not going to be too young. you know, who has, you know, physical issues or, you know, dementia or something like that. Maybe he's too embarrassed to say, oh, well, I'm taking care of mommy, which I would think that would be honorable and wonderful. Sure. I would love a man who was honest enough to say, sure, you know, I'm kind of living with my mom because for now she's having a rough time. My dad's not here anymore. And, you know, I would think, wow, what a cool guy. What a nice guy. Not a mommy's boy. I would say, what a wonderful son to be taking care of your mother. So what I would do is, and not to give therapy over the air, and I always establish, too, that you and I, out there listeners, do not have a therapeutic relationship. These are only suggestions that, you know, you get with him the next time you see him. And sit down, if you're really interested in this guy, sit down and have a nice chat and say, you know, I was just, you know, wondering if you would prefer me to back off. I see, it seems that I'm always calling you whenever I would like to get together with you. And I'm really cool. I'm a big girl. And if you don't want to pursue this relationship, I really think you're a neat guy. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of nice attributes. I really am connecting with you, but if you're feeling that this is not going to work or something's going on, I'd love you to tell me because I really will back off. That takes a lot of chutzpah, too, though.
Takes a lot of chutzpah.
But I mean, you know.
She can also ask him if he'd be willing to call her. That would mean a lot to her.
Right.
And see if he comes through with that.
Right. Right. Yeah, it's just the lack of information. I mean, that's the problem that I'm having with, you know, because speak up. And some guys just don't, they're not able to verbalize really everything that's going on because they're so focused on managing the chaos or something.
Right.
You know, he's got to work. He's got to take care of his mom. He's
recently
divorced.
He may have children. We don't know.
That's a biggie, too. Does he have kids? You know, and that's, I mean, okay, if he's 53, he has probably young adults, you know, and they have their issues, especially sometimes financially. I know whole families who are moving in together because, I mean, literally, they've lost real estate. They've lost the value in their stocks. They've lost so. It's really sad in this economic time, and we all have to kind of pull together and come together.
Right.
And if you have a pretty decent or healthy family dynamic, you're lucky because then you can kind of survive in this.
Yeah.
Let's see here. I'm going to read another letter. All right. Dear Dr. Michelle, this is how it comes. After his affair, I am a victim of my husband's midlife crisis. After 28 years of marriage and 4 adult children. Yipes! I'm 44 and was shocked to find my husband is having an affair with a worker who is 25 years younger than him. I can't trust him, although he's affectionate and says he doesn't want to lose me. Oy. I want to leave him, but I don't have the courage to go, as I have no friends. I've devoted most of my life to being a mother and a wife. I've been seeing a psychiatrist for the past year, but I'm still so angry I can't accept what he's done to me. I'm so confused that it's destroying me inside. I do need my space, but I don't know how to go about getting it. Wow, that's a heavy. That's a heavy situation right there.
Oh, dear.
You know, because 28 years. And, you know, okay, she's saying her husband may be having a midlife crisis. Yeah, okay, whatever. She's 44. And, you know, that happens.
An interesting thing that popped
right
out to me was that she has no friends.
Right, right. That popped out to me, too. Because, I mean, you know, there's some...
There's not a balance there.
Right.
He's her whole world.
Right.
That's hard.
That is really difficult. And you know, then we have to explore what is it within her that is difficult to create friendly relationships? What is it within her that's making it difficult for her to open up and share with women?
Mm-hmm.
Or is he one of those guys that won't allow her to have friends? You know what I'm saying?
I mean, there's a lot of...
You know, I need you here.
Right.
I want you here. Or are the kids? She has 4 kids?
Yes.
Yipes. She's 44, so she probably has teens.
Yeah.
Young adults, maybe, some teens. Are these kids so demanding? And he's maybe an absent father. So she's having to do most of the parenting. Oh, my God.
And you're talking about finances.
Oh, yes. Exactly. And he, yeah, seems like he's working and all
that. Is he willing to stop his relationship?
I don't know.
Mm.
Well, what she says here is he is affectionate, and he says he doesn't want to lose me. I don't know if he's continuing. She said my husband is having an affair with a worker 25 years younger than him. So he's continually doing that, I guess. Well, that, you know, that's the deal breaker. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was saying before. Sometimes you have to be able to just set a boundary. Where
exactly.
You count, where you matter. You're first. Because it sounds like she's not first.
Yes.
You know, if she doesn't have the strength to take care of herself, how is she going to be there for everyone else?
Right, right. And you know, the appropriate responses would be shock and anger and confusion. You know, learning that the person
really
you
hurt.
Love has
That's
betrayed
so
you.
Yeah, the wound of betrayal
after,
is
what
unbelievable.
Are they, 28 years. And if a man or a woman reaches midlife, you know, and they're unhappy with their life, then they owe it to their spouse, in my opinion, to talk about ways of change that work for both partners, not just
right.
one of you.
Right.
You know, I'm not happy. You know, you.
Yeah,
there's
but why
always,
is he exiting the relationship?
Right.
You kind of have to ask.
Right. I presume, you know, he stopped the affair. I don't know. And if there's any hope of saving the marriage, he has to furnish proof that he has stopped the affair.
Right.
You know, whether it's saving your marriage, he has to let you know. And maybe that's showing records of his cell phone calls or showing okay. calling exactly where he is and coming home at certain designated times,
mm-hmm.
following through, making sure. And this woman
being
sounds
consistent.
Like, yes. And she's, you know, she's really hurt. And maybe
yeah.
she doesn't want to be you know, a Gestapo saying, you come home at this time. You
no,
need to do
no,
this.
You have to find
yeah.
out. You have to tell somebody where you're at.
Exactly.
And if they have enough compassion and empathy to understand how wounded you feel.
Exactly. You know, it takes a long time to build trust in the first place, and even more time and effort to rebuild it after it has been shattered by deliberate action. So
yes.
I would ask her, does your husband have any sense of trauma that he's inflicted on you? Does he have any sense of the trauma that he's inflicted? You know, he was the one who broke the rules that you thought you both were living by. So he needs to hear, and he needs to express then his understanding
mm-hmm.
of how much trauma that he hears her saying that he's caused.
And what would it take for her
right.
to get her, the control back in her own life?
Exactly. And if he doesn't have an awareness of the pain that he's caused you, then it's almost impossible to repair the damage. And she might be better off creating a new life of her own. And I know it sounds easy, and snap the fingers, bada boom, you have four kids.
She may be able, in the position she's at, to still create a new life of her own.
Exactly. Exactly. No, I agree
with that. By becoming her own advocate, by
That's
being
right.
her own best friend and finding some good friends.
And if she chooses
finding,
to stay
yeah.
in that relationship, she and her husband must construct a new relationship from the ground up. And I think they have to openly agree to the rules that they both establish. And this is what you and I do
right.
as relationship therapists.
Right.
What rules are you both going to abide by? What are you willing to do to make this work for each other?
And also, I mean, we're talking about her, but he obviously had to leave for a reason. So if he comes in, my first thought isn't, oh, poor woman, that son of a gun, what did he do to her?
Right.
You know, I have to find out what's going on for him as well. You
exactly.
know, what is it that created his need to
well,
leave?
Well, exactly. And by no means is she the cause of her husband's affair. But
oh, God, no.
Having little life of her own kind of imbalances the relationship in a way that can make an outsider appear more alluring.
Mm-hmm.
It renders her far more dependent on her husband for companionship than he is on her.
Right. Absolutely. You know, you want an equal. You want a friend. You want someone to participate with you. You know, someone who you are their sole source of life.
Right.
Sustenance, you know.
Exactly.
The only thing that matters to you.
Exactly. And if sometimes maybe if this lady does not have anything else going on in her life, if these kids are grown up and pretty self-sufficient, over time, he may be growing to resent the burden of the responsibility of being her only sense of security. He may be really resenting that he's caring. Why don't you have your own life? Why don't you have your own friends? Why don't you have your own interests?
Right. And, you know, kind of work that through and find out. I mean, she may come from a family where, I mean, I can honestly remember my grandmother saying that my grandfather was her whole life.
Right.
She lived, breathed,
right.
cooked, slept.
Yes.
Did everything
exactly.
with him in mind. And it's
yes.
changed.
It has changed. It has changed so much. And that is the classic back then. You know, that really mm-hmm. was the classic. But
and maybe she needs to learn she has
yeah.
those opportunities
exactly.
now.
Exactly. So I would say to you, my dear, who wrote me, whether you stay or go, you need a life of your own. You need friendships and activities that are rewarding to you, because everybody does. And those are the hallmarks of mental health.
Yes.
You know, so I thank you for emailing me. By the way, if you'd like to email me a question here on the air, you can do so, and I'll be happy to give you a call, see if it's cool that I air it live for everybody else to hear. And I can, of course, email you back, help you out. And it's docmichelle@aol.com. docmichelle@aol.com. Or you can log on to my website, which is Dr. Michelle Therapy, drmichelletherapy.com. Therapy is T-H-E-R-A-P-Y. If you don't know how to spell it, it's cool. It'll correct it for you. And you'll find out more about me and some of the stuff that I do and how I can help you out as well. And I want to thank my guest today, Ellen Roth, psychotherapist. You're so good.
Thank you, Michelle.
And guys, if you need to get in touch with Ellen, if anything you've heard today, you know, interests you on both sides here, and you may have some questions about hypnosis. We were talking quite a while ago in the show about, you know, how hypnosis can help you get through a lot of problems,
mm-hmm.
and cure some addictions and bad behaviors.
Patterns that you'd like to change.
Exactly. And thank you so much for joining me here.
Thank you,
I
Michelle.
Really appreciate it. Guys, again, if you want to get in touch with me here on Dr. Michelle on the couch, I'd love to hear from you. It's a drmichelletherapy.com website here. All right. Get off the couch, or you can just stay, because T.J. McCormick is here for his show. One of the best here. I'm telling you, he's the man. Have a great week, and actually, I'll be back tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. Enjoy. Until then, do take care of yourself. That's your friendly psychologist, Dr. Michelle. Bye-bye.